he's the first speaker in this year in our seminar, La question de la mobilisation en sciences humaines et sociales. And Amandine has worked on many problems of nonlinear partial differential equations and many problems of mathematical physics. In particular, Amandine is one of the world leaders of Bose-Einstein condensates mathematical modeling. She's written a famous book about this. But she's also now working on a project of modeling which fits very well into the seminar, I have to say. It also raises questions about modeling of human performance in athletics and in cycling. So the question is there an optimal strategy in racing? Thank you very much, Amandine.
So I would like to thank you very much for this invitation, for this very nice introduction. So I must say that this is a very recent work that I'm going to present, a joint work with Frédéric Bonans, who's at INRIA. And this is a topic that I've started 2 years ago, and this is my first presentation. So I'm very happy to give you... the first insight of this direction of work, which is, I think, very promising. So the talk will be divided. I first introduce my motivations to work on this type of topic, which is quite new in terms of mathematics as well. I'll describe a work of 1974 of Joe Keller on related things, then our own results and our possible directions of works. So the motivation, there's a double motivation. The first one is what is called e-sport. How can we put serious mathematics on something which is really a large phenomenon today? So I have put some digits here about what people do in France. So there are 60,000 people doing marathon, 200,000 running regularly, and... because these people can buy a lot of things and are ready to buy a lot of things. There are three different type of things on the market. The first one is launched by firms like Nike, Adidas, ASICS. So I was very surprised because when I met Henri over there in Montparnasse, there was a big brand of Nike selling, I don't know if you've seen it, the new bracelet, which is called Fuel Band. Which is going to compute your calories. So you start putting it in the morning, and at the end of the day, it will tell you how many calories you have spent. So it's very good if you go up the stairs and down, you know, in this room a lot, that it will improve your calories and things like that. So this bracelet, I don't know all the technology of it, but I was impressed to see just the advertisement just outside here at Montparnasse. So these three brands have been selling a lot of things with their either the shoe or the T-shirt, and they have, so Nike is Nike Plus, Adidas is My Coach and My ASICS, and concerning running, it's going to tell you whether you should speed up or slow down in order to improve your performance. So of course the question is, on what is this based on? So concerning energy, concerning increasing the pace or slowing down, what is it based on? So for the moment, it's very simple. It's based on the computation of the the heart frequency. Sorry, I thought I would be talking in French. So everything FC is heart frequency. So the measure of your heart frequency minus the measure when you're still, divided by this heart frequency minus the maximal thing. So according to this ratio, between 1 and 10, you start with a curve that will tell you whether you have to speed up or slow down. So it's very basic science behind. So these firms, Garmin, TomTom, they have now watches that are coupled with GPS and will give you information about your velocity. But in the end, what you end up with is a lot of statistical information and nothing really concerning what is going on. So a lot of measures, but it's nothing really more than the measures. So then what people like doing is share with their friends on Facebook or whatever their performance, so essentially the velocity, how long they have run, how many calories they have spent, and this is in France more than 10 million loading a year, and there are a lot of websites that are developing on this. So as I said, something is going on. And for instance, this week on a French magazine, there was this, when sport is promising sweating, tears, and wireless. So what kind of thing, just to show you the kind of thing that on which mathematics could be used. So there's first the tennis racket. So this is, I must say, I've been working on this topic for 2 years. When I started working on it, all these things that I'm showing here were costing several thousand euros. So people knew they would be able to have such device, but it was unthinkable to sell them because it was too expensive. So things are moving very, very quickly because now they are becoming rather cheap, I would say, compared to how much it cost only 2 years ago. So you can buy the tennis racket. This is for you, Henri. That will improve everything. So this is, you don't need maybe the improvement. So actually, it will give you the statistical analysis of your best service and things like that. So when you look at it carefully, it's just analyzing for the moment. It's only able to analyze and not really draw anything about predicting or telling you what is to be improved. There's still the need of the real coach behind or the real person analyzing it and saying, okay, this that I've seen that I've done 10 times, I need to improve it. So there's the glass. So it's like the Google Glass. Essentially, instead of having the information on your smartphone, you're going to have it directly on your glasses, telling you your velocity, the velocity of the wind, your heart frequency. And so from this, it could tell you what you should do. But for the moment, there's not much. It's just measuring, and you can have the measure. So it's not out. Huh? It's going to be out in 2014. So there's this. Then there's just this technology that you can put on your arm. This is the fuel band. So now that you've seen it, you'll notice the advertisement outside. So this bracelet measures your calories and will send directly your information to on the web. And then there's the football ball. That is going to analyze very precisely where it has been shot, how many times, more information on the trajectories, and so on and so forth. Okay, I'm not going to go on. Every year in Las Vegas, they have a very big show and workshop on all the new technologies, and it's going on very quickly. But it means that mathematicians can do something. So our aim is really to put serious mathematics on this kind of thing. The second motivation for the specific problem that I'm going to talk about is physiological observations from the group of Véronique Billat in Évry, where they have noticed that if you ask someone to run at constant speed, the person will stop before the person. So if you put someone behind, before him, imposing him to run exactly at constant speed, the person will stop before that will they say will die before the person who's allowed to vary his velocity. So this is a general idea that they have. And here is a measurement. So you have to look at the triangles. The triangles are a measurement of the velocity. This is a 1,500-meter race. And you see on the measurement of the velocity that the velocity is indeed varying by about 10%. This is the velocity here. The speed is varying between 5 and 7 with a sprinting at the end, but the velocity is certainly not constant. So
that's a professional sportsman? Or?
Yes. So actually they made 15 people run on this track, and these people were running with a mask, a very big mask, including a GPS, which measured the heart frequency, oxygen exchanges, and the velocity. And they were recording. Of course, the question is how this device has some kind of error in it, and you don't know how much, because the GPS has an error. So because the GPS has an error, the velocity measure has an error. So of course, the people who don't believe in this theory say, but the variation is just due to the variations of your measurements, which are not good. So this, then, you can trust or not trust. But if you ask people who run marathons will, I mean, every person that I've asked about it has agreed that indeed when you run a marathon, it's not good to follow the balloon which is moving at exactly constant velocity, because there are times when you want to increase your velocity, slow down, increase, slow down. So people who run sufficiently long races usually have this, know this in their physiology, and put it in practice. So this is our motivation. So on how is our model going to be based? It's going to be based on the velocity, and thus the acceleration, which is the derivative, on the propulsive force. Now the English is
frictions,
thank you, and on energy. So just to make sure that everybody is with me, energy in human being has to be divided into two parts. The energy that you get from the oxygen, which is called aerobic energy. But this energy doesn't start right away when you start running. For instance, if you run a sprint, 100 meter, you're not relying on your aerobic energy. You're relying on the other part of your energy, which is the anaerobic energy, which is either at the very beginning made up of glycogen. And this, I won't go into the details of how you spend all this. It's just I want to differentiate the two sources. And the other thing that I will need is what is called VO2 max, which is the maximal consumption of oxygen, which is important in our equations. So from this, we can start. And we can start with the model that Joe Keller, from Courant Institute, the one that you know, started in 1974. So it's based on two simple equations, which is the equations of dynamics, which is here, and an energy balance, which is here. So this one is just saying that the acceleration, I've divided everything by the mass of the runner, so the acceleration dvdt is equal to the sum of the force, and the sum of the force is the propulsive force minus the friction. So the particularity of the propulsive force is that it cannot exceed a maximum, because whatever his capacity, the runner cannot put propulsive force above a certain threshold. So there's this threshold here, and it has to be positive, because if he wants to run, he's not going to go backwards. So he's putting force. The friction, there are many ways to put the friction. The main term in what we're considering is the one coming from internal resistance of muscles and what is going on at the level of the shoe and things like that. I don't want to enter the details, but it's quite reasonable to measure it in terms of a linear term with respect to the velocity. If you want to add friction due to drag, then it's quite possible in the model. But for the runner that we're going to consider in a first step, it's really negligible, except if you put a very strong wind. But if there's no wind, this term is really negligible with respect to this one. So as a first step, I will not put it. So this is my first equation, very simple equation. And then I need to make an energy balance. So what Keller is saying is that he's making an energy balance on the aerobic energy. So he's saying the variation of my energy is what is taken from my oxygen consumption, which he calls sigma, and what is lost by the fact that he's running, he's producing work. So the work capacity is the velocity times the force. So with this, these two equations, maybe I will write them on the blackboard to keep track of what is going on. So I have dvdt is F minus V over tau, with F between 0 and F max. And I have dvdt is sigma minus Fv. And I have two constraints on F, and I have a constraint on the energy. That is, the guy cannot go beyond zero energy, which is reasonable. So for this, I have to eat my initial condition. I start with zero velocity. I start with a fixed energy. And I will end with zero energy. And the issue is I fix a distance, and I want to optimize the time to run it. So it's a simple mathematical problem. I have two equations. I have three constraints and initial condition. I want to optimize on t. So what Keller did in his paper is he didn't give a proof of how the optimal run should be. He just stated that it has three pieces. The first piece, you're saturating the first constraint here. You're at maximal force. So, of course, you see that if you're at maximal force here, you can solve your ODE for V, and it has an exponential increase. And this is the first step. You're at maximal force, and you're speeding up. Then, he says, we are on a situation where we have no constraint. All the constraints are not saturated. So the minimizer of the Hamiltonian should be constant velocity. So the guy runs with constant velocity. And the last constraint is saturated at the end of the race. Zero energy. He has a short run at zero energy. And if you have zero energy, then dEdt is zero. So Fv is equal to sigma. So from F you get V. I mean, from V you get F, and you get this equation here. You can solve, and you have your last part. Of course, this part is not satisfactory at all, because you know that people do not slow down at the end of the race.
Well, some 200 meters dash.
No, but here, sorry, I should have said, this model, if you are on a short run, you are at maximal force all the time.
Right. And people do slow down. In fact, the famous Gary Moore slowed down, even breaking the world record.
Bolt. But that's on a short race.
On 100 meters.
100 meter. Yeah, that's which is I should have said. He's not running at constant. Well, here you are at 120 seconds, so it's not.
But you could see that it slowed down, right? Yeah, but it's arrival of the games, it slowed down, and yet he goes to work.
Okay, I should have said that the type of distance that I'm considering is not sprinting. Because if you're on a very short race, like 100 or 200, up to 200 meters, you're not running with your aerobic energy. It's like you're running without oxygen at all. So you're just at maximal force and you run. So it has to be, I mean, this type of thing can be adapted, but it has to be adapted in some way. So this is considering sufficiently long race, which is more than 400 meters, let's say. So this is Keller's result. From this, I'm going to say something rather quickly. Thanks to optimal control theory, we have proved that they're exactly these three pieces and not more. That you couldn't go from maximal force to constant velocity, maximal force, you couldn't oscillate like that. It's only these three pieces and nothing else. The way we do it is, so the first thing is we prove that we start with, because Keller was stating it, so we prove using the Hamiltonian that we have to start with a maximal force, and it has to end with zero energy. And the other thing is that when you are on a zero energy piece, you cannot be at maximal force. So it has to be a non-constraint part that you have in between. And if no constraint is active, then it's very easy to prove in some sense that the velocity is constant, because by the maximum principle of Pontryagin, the control has to minimize the Hamiltonian of the system that you can write. And you can write also the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to the force. And once you do it, you have to go to this equation. You look at d psi dt minus psi over tau, where psi is the derivative of the Hamiltonian. Of course, if you have no constraint, the derivative of the Hamiltonian with respect to the force has to be zero. So psi is zero, psi dot is zero. And from this, you deduce from the state equation that the derivative of PE has to be zero. So this number P is constant and V is constant. So it's rather simple once you look at the Hamiltonian of the system to compute it and check at the pieces. And Keller is right, of course. So now let me come to our numerical result and improvement on Keller's theory. So we were thinking of something like 800 meters. And what we do is we're going to tell you what velocity the runner has to have and how much energy he has spent. And it will rely on the same two equations, except that we're going to take into account the anaerobic energy and take into account things that will be more realistic with respect to Keller's model. So the first important thing is that Keller was speaking of only oxygen, and in fact we have realized that his model, these two equations that are here on the blackboard, are not modeling really the balance of only aerobic energy, but what he's modeling here is what is called AOD, which is accumulated oxygen deficit. So it's not the aerobic energy, but on the contrary, the oxygen deficit. Accumulated oxygen deficit, which is related to the anaerobic energy and not aerobic energy. So in order to understand that, we introduce a hydraulic analogy, which is the following. You have to imagine that I will start with the aerobic energy, so this is oxygen. Your energy coming from oxygen is of infinite capacity because you can go on breathing. And it's coming here through this tub at a constant rate, which we call sigma, and which is related to VO2 max, which is the maximal oxygen consumption. So here is this container, infinite capacity and constant rate here flowing. The other container is finite capacity with a surface AP here, and we assume that here this height is 1, and it's flowing down through here. So the two are connected through this tub, and it's flowing down. So this one is modeling the anaerobic energy. And so you have some initial value of your anaerobic energy, which I call EN0. And what is left is AP time H. Here, this is what you have spent in terms of anaerobic energy. So it's EAN0 minus EAN. And now, of course, the question, if you want to model properly, is at what height do you connect these two containers? Do you connect them at the top here, or do you connect them, as I did in the picture, in the middle? To start with, I want to connect them at the top. And this is where I will find Keller's model. So if I connect them at the top, what I get as work capacity downstairs is always what I need, so it has to be equal to FV. And how much do I get from here? well, I get sigma coming from this part, and I get APDHTT coming from the flow here. So this is the total amount that I have available, and it has to be equal to FV. And if I go back to what is H, dHdt, AP times dHdt is going to be minus dAn over dt. So I put this equal to FV, and what do I find? I find exactly this equation here. I find exactly dEdt, sigma minus dEdt is equal to FV. So putting this upstairs, I find back the equation written by Joe Keller, except that I don't find it for exactly the same energy as what he claimed. But it's good. It means that we are on the good track. So now we can make improvements. So we have found back Keller's model, not for the aerobic energy, but for the AOD, the accumulated oxygen deficit. So now we can do a little better, is do exactly what is on the picture, is we join the two containers at a height phi in the middle. So of course, it means that sigma, the rate at which the big container is flowing into the other, depends on whether the height h is smaller than 1 minus phi or bigger. If it's bigger, we are in the same situation as before. It's flowing at height at rate sigma. If it's smaller, then it's proportional to h over 1 minus phi. And of course, then the balance of work capacity is the same as before, is you want to spend FV, and what is available is sigma, now depending on h, plus APDHDT. So it gives a new equation for the anaerobic energy where sigma is going to be possibly variable. So now there's a third improvement for which we cannot give a hydraulic analogy, unfortunately, but which is motivated by the measurements on real runners. Is it turns out that sigma is not constant in the last part of the race. That is, when you run, at some point when what is left in anaerobic energy is too small, you cannot maintain sigma at its maximal value. So sigma drops when your anaerobic energy gets too small. So this is what I have written here. Sigma drops proportionally to EAN if EAN over EAN zero is less than some critical value. So when you have two, let me show it here. So for some reason, and if you have any idea about the hydraulic analogy, I'm really interested in it, but for some reason, here, when this level is here, you cannot maintain a rate of sigma here. It's slowing down. So this is what we put in our model. And so we have this sigma now, which has three parts, which is linear when the anaerobic energy is too small. It's linear when you are close to your initial data, and it's constant in the middle. And with this, we put this into BOOKOP, which is a software specialized in optimal control theory. And we find the following. So 800 meters, I'm plotting against the time, the velocity here, the force, the value of sigma so that you remember, and AOD, which is EAN0 minus EAN. So let's start with the force, which is probably the easiest thing to understand. So what we were saying before is we start at maximal force. Same thing. We start at maximal force, and we speed up. Okay. And then the end of the race, again, is at maximal force due to the fact that sigma drops. Because sigma is dropping, and this is very intuitive in terms of a running, your oxygen consumption is dropping when you're tired. And so in order to speed up at the end of the race, to put back the maximal force. And in between, the force is going down to a minimal value. So in terms of velocity, you're speeding up a lot, reaching more or less your cruising speed. And there you have what people... I should have asked you, do some of you run a lot, like 800 meters and... No one wants to, is going to acknowledge. I should have asked at the very beginning. So in terms of running, people often speak of negative split and positive split, saying, are you going to run a little faster the first part and a little slower the second part, or a little slower the first part and faster the second part. So in this diagram is more typical of what is called negative split, because you're slightly slowing down here in order to speed up in this part, and then you sprint in the end. What should I say extra? I think we have it. Do you have any question on this simulation? So maybe I can go on. So just to remember what we have seen, the first part of the run is still at maximal force. The force decreases to its minimal value, and so does the velocity. Then the force and the velocity increase again. And the very last part, you're at maximal force. In fact, there's something that you cannot see in the numerics, is that there are very, very few points, like a couple of points, at zero energy at the end. But you don't see them because they are too small, and probably corresponding to the fact that anyway, after the body has to slow down, you cannot just stop and like that. Okay, so now I'm going to discuss the main point of our modeling is recreation of energy. So this is based on the fact that if you do what is called interval training. So interval training, you run and you stop, and you run and you stop, and you run and you stop. So why do people do interval training? Is that because they recover energy doing that? Is that if you run, let's say, for 5 minutes and stop 30 seconds, in the 30 seconds where you stop, your body is going to recreate some of your anaerobic energy. So if you do that, then you're allowed to run much longer, many more periods of 3 minutes or 5 minutes than if you were trying to do it without stopping. So it means that, so of course, stopping, like interval training, is the worst thing you can think about in terms of varying your velocity. So the idea is there's maybe something better about varying the velocity, which is slowing down, speeding up and slowing down, and speeding up and slowing down. This should be better for your energy than running at your constant velocity, like in Kelly's model. So this is what we wanted to put in the equation. So this we try to put because we wanted to put something in the equation that is going to recreate energy. And this is very funny because after we did this paper, I published a paper in the Huffington Post trying to explain what we had done and in very general words. And there was one of the comments of the person saying, but you claim mathematics are bringing something, but mathematics don't bring anything. Physics and physiologists, they know it, and mathematics is just simulating the equations. And really, in this case, it's not the case, because it's really the mathematics that are... Because yes, the physiologists say you have to vary your energy. The solution of the equation has to have a varying velocity, this is for sure. But the question was, how do you get a variation of the velocity from the equation? What terms do you have to put in the equation? It's sure a term depending on the acceleration. But how and why do you have to put this term? And the answer is here in green, is that if you have a convex Hamiltonian, then the minimum, the maximum principle will tell you that the solution is at maximal force. In order to oscillate between zero force and maximal force, you have to have a Hamiltonian which becomes non-convex in F. And this, you cannot just guess it from the physiology, is you have to have the maximum principle behind to tell you you have to lose convexity to get that something is going to oscillate. So our function eta that we are adding here, depending on the acceleration being convex, this turns the Hamiltonian into a non-convex Hamiltonian. So what function, okay, the easiest function that you can think of, which is a convex function of the acceleration, is a square. So this is what we put, is we put a term that is going to, is zero, so I've written it here. Eta is zero if you have a positive acceleration, and eta is a square if a is negative, and we choose the constant c here around 10. So this is that what I wrote as ca minus to the square, where a minus is the negative part. So you put a term that is doing nothing if you're speeding up or running at constant speed, and you put a term which is proportional to a square if you're slowing down. So again, I'm sorry, I have no hydraulic analogy. I have this motivation that I explain you from interval training. And so it gives me a slightly more complicated equation for the variation of the energy for my energy balance, but not that complicated, and I can still go on with my numerics and theoretical analysis. So here's my equation. The variation of the energy is equal to sigma of E, as before, minus FV, and I'm adding this term, which is eta of A. Oh, sorry, I should have put F minus V over tau, of course, when this number is negative, because A, that I've written here, A is dV dt, so it's exactly F minus V over tau. So with this, I've forgotten to say something important, is that from the maximum principle, you get that the optimal solution has to oscillate between 0 and F max. So, of course, you can imagine very easily that a runner cannot oscillate exactly with infinite slope. So this is something that we have to add in the model, is that because the runner cannot vary his propulsive force instantaneously, we have to put a bound on this derivative of the propulsive force. And so the solution, maybe I show it right away, is here, and I'll come back to the comments, is this. So I still have my sigma, which has the same shape. I still have my energy, which has the same shape, except that I see now that I recreate slightly my energy. And here's the force. I start with maximal force. I have plateaus at maximal force, and I oscillate. And the way I oscillate is I'm exactly on lines where df dt is equal to my constant, because I recall you that I remind you, sorry, that I put this constraint. Df dt has to be smaller than a constant. In fact, I'm going to saturate this constraint. And so here, I'm either at maximal force or I'm at df dt is minus c or plus c. And this makes the oscillations of velocity. And these oscillations are quite consistent with the measurements that I showed you at the very beginning on the real runner. So maybe let me go back here. Numerically, on an 800 meter, there's an improvement on the time of run, which is of 0.7%. So it's not much, but it's there, that it is better to vary the velocity. Numerically, you can see it. So this is it. Another remark is that there's a kind of a periodic problem that is coming out. This I have said. The oscillations are very similar to the measurements, and the period doesn't seem to depend really on the on the distance to run, but rather on the rate of decrease of energy. So what we have done is try to define a periodic problem. Is I say, okay, I want to define a periodic problem where after a time t, I go back to the same velocity, I go back to the same energy except that I've lost energy at a constant rate. My force is periodic, I put my equations, I put my constraints, and I want to minimize the distance run. And it's very funny because if you do that, you find that this periodic problem, this is the periodic problem here, this is the solution of the periodic problem in terms of velocity and force, and this is the solution of the previous problem where I just took a period and zoomed on it. So you see that really the problem is very similar to the periodic one. So there's a periodic structure coming out. Okay, so now some words, very quick words on proofs. This relies on the Hamiltonian of the system. As I said, it becomes non-convex in F because eta is convex, and this is this implies an oscillation between 0 and F max. And this oscillation has to be understood as a probability to take this maximal or minimal value. So if f is has values into 0 f max, what we do is we replace f by a distribution of probability so that in the end, to have only these two values, f of t becomes the expectation of f. And so we can... essentially, what we're doing, going to do is in the equation, we're going to replace f by its zero value and see what is going on with what is. So we are. Sorry, I made a mistake here. There shouldn't be a 1 over t. We're back to the problem. Minimize the distance to run with initial velocity zero, initial energy being E zero with our. Equations, except that now we have put zero force here and we have put the expectation here. So of course if eta equals zero, this is Keller's equation, so in what we're proving as a Bayes theorem, we're going to have results on Keller's equation. So the first important thing that we prove is that if sigma remains constant and if eta is non-zero, there's no control in the sense that there's no optimal solution. So it's reasonable is that if you don't put bound on the variation of the force, if you're just looking at the equation without the bound on the variation of the force and you assume sigma constant to simplify, the fact that F has to oscillate between zero and F max, you get mathematically that there's no optimal solution. So it's really reasonable also mathematically to put this constraint on the derivative of the force because otherwise there's no optimal solution. So with this constraint, we can prove also that you always start with a maximal force arc, that if you have no constraint and sigma is constant, then you have V constant. And the other thing is if sigma is constant, the only possible place where you have maximal force is at t equals zero. So it's really consistent with what we have done, is that if you want to end with F max, you have to have non-constant sigma, which is totally consistent with the physiological observation, is that indeed at the end, you want to speed up, to go back at maximal force, and for this, definitely your maximal oxygen consumption drops. So it was funny to see that the mathematics was consistent with this. So if I want to sum up what I've been telling you in terms of our result, we have two main results. The negative split result is that you have to speed up in the second part of the race rather than in the first one, and you have to vary your velocity because when you vary your velocity, you recreate energy, and this allows you to improve your time of run. So the natural question that you want to ask is, how are you going to extend that to other sports? This was our first modeling. So you can extend it to cycling. Of course, in cycling, it's very important to take care of altitude and of wind. I mean, you can also do it when running, but it's just that because the velocity is rather small for the runner, the effect is almost negligible with respect to what we have seen. So the velocity becomes much bigger for a bike, so of course this is reasonable. So for this you have to change your first equation that I have here. You have to add a term linked to the change of potential energy due to altitude, and you have to add your friction term, your drag term. So sinus alpha is the exact computation is this. You can really, it's almost h prime of d, where h is the altitude and d is the distance that you have run. And the drag, I have put some numbers here. This coefficient, so vw is the velocity of the wind, and cw is related to the mass to the surface of the runner, to the density of air, which of course is almost one, but is different if you're in Mexico or in Paris. And this coefficient CS also depends strongly on how you are on your bike. So if you're in a normal position, I would say then like this, then it's 0.840. If you're running, you know, in this optimal drag position, then you can decrease it a lot. So you can input all this into the model, also varying the position according to your run. You can include the fact that you might want to brake when it's going down. So you can put all this into the equation depending on what you want to do. This is available. I mean, we can really extend it and put it in our software and decide what is going on. You can also do similar things in swimming. The only thing is swimming is that people are turning back and forward at the end of the pool. So this has to be taken into account into the velocity, but it's doable. We haven't done it for the moment because we had no special motivation to do it, but you can really include it. So now I'm coming to the kind of things that we could really improve. So as I said just before, take into account the altitude, better the friction. Also, yes, I haven't said it, but if the wind is with you, then it's better. There's something that could be done that we haven't done because we didn't have the impression that it was strongly improving the results, but maybe it could, is, as I said at the very beginning, the anaerobic energy is coming from various sources. So in the hydraulic model, you can take into account the various source, the fact that there is this energy coming from glycogen, there's the formation of lactic acid. And so you could imagine putting two other containers with the nice tubes at the nice levels. That would take care of the control, of the extra controls that you have to put in it. So the only thing that we have tried for the moment was not changing in the end the velocity profile. But of course, it would change the estimate of the different anaerobic energy, especially if you imagine you want to build from this equation something that is going to measure your anaerobic energy and how you're going to slim. If this could allow you to get slimmer if you run, then you would need to go to the good energy that is working on this. So. Okay, the main point of my open question is this, is that I'm sure that all of you in this room has passed a lot of exams, and I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but probably when you pass your exam, when you take your exam and when you pass it, in order to pass it, it's much better if you're confident, and at the beginning of your exam, you're just saying to yourself, okay, I'm really going to make it because I'm good enough and I'm going. There's no problem, it's going to be okay. So if you start like this, there's a much bigger chance that you pass your exam than if you're just thinking about your next holidays. And probably for sportsmen, there's something similar. If you imagine someone on his bike having to go up his road, is he going with the same rate, heart rate, velocity, energy, etc., etc.? There's probably a term here in this equation where you could add plus if the person is really determined to go up. So if he's really determined to go up, there is something that should increase either the energy or the propulsive force or something of that kind. So I don't know exactly what to put in the equation for the moment. I don't know how to put it. The only thing I can tell you is that now on the electrocardiograms that people have and on the measures, there are some specific intervals that they call RR, and from which you have information on your parasympathetic sympathetic state, and which should give information on how concentrated the person is. So for the moment, this is used on long-time recovery. That is to say, for instance, in periods of 15 days or 1 month, to say, okay, you haven't trained too much. Because the trouble in training is that in order to succeed in a race, you have to train, of course. But if you train too much, you're going to be tired. So there's a balance for a professional sportsman to find in how much training you have to do. So usually what they do is that 2-3 days before the race, they stop training, because otherwise they get exhausted. So for this type of thing, they use these intervals to determine when they should stop and when this training is getting too much, is getting them tired instead of really training them. So my idea is, but for the moment, the physiologists tell me they don't know how to do it. But they don't know because they don't have this in some sense, this macroscopic modeling of the runner. They always think about the velocity, the acceleration, the GPS, the blah blah blah. But they don't understand the idea that you could put a term. I mean, things that I'm ready to do, but they are not ready to do. Is add a term here in my equation here or here that will be something proportional to, I don't know, like an increase in anything in these measures. And I think that this should give an interesting information that should be taken into account in the model. And also another information should be when you measure your heart rate, if ever so, for some extra reason the person is exhausted and the heart rate is blowing up, then you should put a control parameter in the equation as well. Anyway, so the conclusion is that in order to improve your performance, you should increase both your global anaerobic work capacity, that is, increase the size of the anaerobic container. The bigger your container, the longer you can run. And you can increase the size of sigma, that is your oxygen, maximal oxygen rate. And once you've increased these two things, you have to vary your velocity. Well, I thank you for your attention.